So today we are going to speak about neutrinos. So what we have seen up to now for the interactions of the standard model is that finally we can write down the entire pH group of the standard model. So this was this part here was already introduced by Gordon. This is the pH group of QCD that we have seen this week. Okay. Now with the quarks and leptons that we have seen up to now, we know that we cannot write down a mass term of this type. Is that right? So we have seen that if this is a spinor for our fermions, we cannot write down explicitly a mass term of this type. But Gordon already showed you that we need the Higgs mechanism for this, okay? So it doesn't exist a mass matrix of this type, because otherwise this term here would break some of these at least some of these gauge symmetries, okay? So this is the same thing of saying that these fermion representations that we have seen up to now are chiral. Chiral representations of our gauge group, okay? Yeah, so so we have this gauge group in the standard model. This we have seen. We have seen also the several fermions of the standard model, so the quarks and the leptons, both right-handed and left-handed. So if you take one of those representation that already Gordon introduced to you, you cannot write down a term like this in the Lagrangian. Correct, correct. So every time that this happens, that's, this is how people call it, so the fermions are in chiral representation. So chiral means that you cannot write down a mass term of this type, explicit, without breaking gauge invariance. It's a name for this type of fermions.
Okay, so is this different than when we say that we have a chiral period?
Is that something different? Kind of, I mean, it goes in the right direction, in the sense that you're thinking about how to write the mass term for this, for the matter field, for the fermion field that you have, if you can write it down explicitly or not. Okay? So, actually, we have also seen, so Gordon already introduced to you the Higgs mechanism. We have seen how to give mass to all the guys. But actually, we have seen that we have the not 100% sure if it was called in this way, but we have the left-handed leptons with an I index, where this is the Clebor index. So we have seen that this is a SU2 doublet, right? This we have already seen. And we have seen that we can write down explicitly the SU2 component as you have your neutral component and charged component, right? Where this guy is a neutrino. And this is a charged lepton, right? So this field was already discussed by Gordon. But then the question is the following. Using the Higgs mechanism, if you go back to your notes, you should be able to see that you cannot write down any mass term for this guy. Is that right? So with the Lagrangian that Gordon brought down, actually the neutrinos are massless, okay? So basically you cannot write down a mass term like this because of this problem. But also if you do your Higgs mechanism, you see that this guy doesn't get any mass, right? So actually, experimentally, we've seen the following of this lecture, that neutrinos have mass. So how to do that, okay? So what typically people call the standard model Lagrangian doesn't have indeed any mass term for neutrinos. So we are going a little bit beyond the minimal standard model Lagrangian. And today we'll discuss how to give mass to the neutrinos, and actually what are the phenomena that are associated to the neutrinos due to the fact that they have mass, okay? So this is our plan. So let's try to understand how to write down a mass term for neutrinos. So we need additional fields. And this is what I call Ni. Again, I is simply a flavor index. So these guys here are completely singlet under our standard model gauge group, okay? So we can write down as 1, 1, 0. So with this notation, what I mean is that it is a singlet under SU3, singlet under SU2, and 0 hypercharge, okay? So this is an additional representation of our standard model gauge group, okay? Now we can use this new field to write down mass terms for our neutrinos. So this is what are called the right-handed neutrinos, typically, okay? So let's see how we can write down mass terms. Now, first of all, we can see that now, in the Lagrangian, we can write down a mass term of this type. So we have so I take two of these right-handed neutrinos. These are, again, flavor indexes. And this is a 3×3 matrix. So now, actually, this representation here is not chiral anymore, because we see that we can write down an explicit mass term, right? Since this is a completely singlet under the standard model gauge group, this is allowed, right? But this is actually not the only thing that we can write down. We can also write down this additional term. So let's take our Higgs. We take our left-handed leptons. We take a matrix for neutrinos. So this is an additional term that we can write down. So let's see how it works for gauge symmetries, right? So we know that the Higgs is, so using this notation here, the Higgs is a singlet under SU3, so it's not charged under QCD. We know that it is a doublet of SU2. And we know the hypercharge. 1/2. We know what left-handed leptons are, right? So if we put together all these, gauge representations, we see that this term is a gauge singlet. Is that right? So since it is a gauge singlet, it is allowed in our Lagrangian, right? So this is actually quite similar to what we have already seen for actually the quark masses, right? So the representations are different, but this is the same type of term, right? Then of course you have the Hermitian conjugate of these two terms. And then for completeness, we can write down the kinetic term for this new field, right? And this will be given by I and I, partial derivative and I, okay? Now here I don't use the covariant derivative because it's simply a singlet under the standard model gauge group, so the covariant derivative is the same as the partial derivative, okay?
Can you say again why the previous term is a singlet, the gauge singlet?
This step here? So this is the representation for the Higgs. I hope that the notation that Gordon was using, maybe a minus sign, I'm not sure, is, you know, just to be consistent. So this is, we know that is the left-handed leptons. Again, they are singlet under SU3. They're not charged under QCD. So it's a 1. Again, it is a doublet of SU2. Then it has hypercharge minus 1/2. So concerning and this is a singlet that we have seen there. So concerning hypercharges, you get 0. So a singlet under this U1 of hypercharge. Then you can, as we see next step, you can contract the SU2 indexes of these two guys to get a singlet of SU2. And then under QCD, everything is singlet, so we're good. So this is to say that you can put together these representations of the standard model gauge group in such a way to have a singlet of the gauge symmetry. Sounds good? So actually, yeah, one step further is, I think you are quite familiar with that, but just to be quite explicit, so we can write down as this term here as minus so I'm writing down explicitly the two components of the Higgs field, charge component, neutral component, normalization that already Gordon introduced, right? Then we need an epsilon. So this will have an index alpha of SU2, right? Then we need an epsilon tensor that is anti-symmetric. And then we have our lepton field. Beta, and then I write down the remaining terms. Right?
Mm-hmm. So is this a gauge singlet even without the Langer in the end?
Even without, sorry?
Even without the last few terms.
Sorry, velocity terms?
Without the last two terms in that expression, would that still be a gauge singlet?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. It's just that the so, the point is that also, so you see that the problem is you need also to contract a Flavor index. Is that right? So you have this additional index here that you have to take care of. That's why here you need the 3 Flavor of your right-handed neutrino, right? So you have to take care of all the indexes. Right. So with the Lorentz indexes, you need also this field here. Yeah.
One more on what I was saying before. When you take the two weak doublets, you also could get a triplet, say, right? But we know that we're trying to get a singlet here.
Right. So in your Lagrangian, you're allowed just to write down singlet of your standard model gauge field. That's why then you contract in this way to get a singlet out of it. Yeah. Okay, so now let me write down here. So what we can do, so our aim is to understand what type of masses these neutrinos have, okay? So this is already, as we said, an explicit mass term, so you're good with it. Here, to write it down explicitly like a mass term, we have to invoke the Higgs mechanism, as we have already learned for quarks. So basically what we have to do is to go to the minimum of our Higgs potential. So at the minimum, as Gordon already showed you, this Higgs field there will have this form, 1 over square root of 2, 0, v. So this is the Beckham expectation value. I hope that this notation doesn't confuse you. Of course, this is the vacuum expectation value of the Higgs, and this is a neutrino field. Be careful. Can be kind of similar with my handwriting, but it's a completely different thing, of course. Okay? So if we replace the Higgs field at a minimum with its VEV, we can see from here, contracting these indexes, that you can write down also from here a mass term for the neutrinos. Right? So let's write down the mass matrix then, okay? Okay, so let's see how it works. This matrix here is a 6 times 6 matrix. So we see that each block is a 3 times 3. So these were our Clebor indexes that run from 1 to 3. Okay. This was the explicit mass term that is connecting two of the right-handed fields. Right? And then finally, we have these two off-diagonal terms here that are connecting one left-handed field with a right-handed one. Okay?
To get this, you said that the N contains the same kind of fields as in the L? To get this term, you said that the N contains the same kind of terms as the L? Or how did you get a quadratic term in N when there's only a single N in your original term?
So you mean this term here? What is the? You're asking for this N term here, or?
No, not N. I mean actually the one that's small. No, so that makes sense. But the V term.
Right. Here. So the V term. So if you do this contraction.
Mm-hmm.
You see that you are putting together the neutral part of the Higgs with a left-handed neutrino and with a right-handed neutrino. Is that right? So then you have to do this replacement.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then one has to be a little bit careful that here is a transposal of the matrix, but it's coming because you are taking the Hermitian candidate. Okay. So this is the full mass terms that we can write down for neutrinos. Okay. What people usually study are two opposite limits. So either the limit for which this mij is much, much smaller than So this is one limit that can be studied. So basically, this diagonal block is much, much smaller than these two. Okay. So you can neglect this term. And then you see that actually if you do that, to neglect this explicit mass term, then you see that you have only this guy. And the neutrinos are behaving exactly like quarks, right? You have just this Yukawa coupling, as for quarks, and then you give them mass thanks to the Higgs mechanism, right? So everything runs like for quarks. And the neutrinos that you get out of that are called Dirac neutrinos. Okay. Then there is actually the opposite limit. So the limit for which Mij is much bigger than lambda ij v over square root of 2. So we see that in this limit, you can consider this off-diagonal term as a perturbation of this matrix that is just composed by diagonal blocks. Okay? So we can write down, actually, the masses considering this as a perturbation. Okay? So let's see what happens to our mass terms if we expand in these small terms here. Okay? This we can do. So we can write down the mass terms as minus v squared over 4 So let's see what I have done here. So this is our diagonal mass term, right? And then actually, for this term here, I'm expanding, because we see that this term here that is linking two of the left-handed fields. So these are these guys, OK? You see that if you put directly this to 0, the mass term would be 0, right? But then you can do the expansion and take the first term that we see will be like V over M suppressed. Okay? So this is simply an expansion of this mass terms, keeping just the leading term. Okay? So actually what we know experimentally is that our masses are, let's say, of the order of 1 eV. So if you remember the masses of our quarks and leptons, they were much, much, much larger than this. So we know that we have to get out of this expression something that is quite, quite tiny. Okay. So this is experimentally. Now,
how recent is that figure? Because I think I remember seeing last year people talking about on the order of maybe 5 to 10 even since we've got off.
Yeah, so sorry. This is, let's say, order. 1 eV. Yeah, can be a few, but yeah. Actually, so this is quite something that is, you know, investigating the research nowadays. So, yeah. But yeah, the take home is that order, one EV, very, very small if compared to the other masses. Okay. So let's see what we learn. So actually, I forgot to mention that this second limit, the corresponding neutrinos are called Majorana neutrinos. Okay. So if we want to attain this order 1 eV masses, we know that this vacuum expectation value of the Higgs is something like V, is something like 246 GeV. Okay? As I hope Gordon already told you. So we see that we have really a long way. So what we learn is that actually, if the neutrinos are Dirac neutrinos, we have to have kind of eigenvalues of this guy here, the target level of lambda, say order 10 to the minus 11, 10 to the minus 12. This is tiny Yukawa coupling, actually. So this is for Dirac neutrinos. Let me write here. For Majorana, let me write down in a very simplified form this mass matrix. Of course, this mass matrix will be a you know, generic 3 times 3 mass matrix. But I can write it down like the mass of the Majorana neutrinos as 0.1 eV times lambda v over GV square 10 to the 10 GV over M. So basically what I've done here is to take you know, this expression, and then I estimate what kind of masses I can get out of it if M is a sort of you know, eigenvalue of this matrix here, and lambda is the eigenvalue of the off-diagonal term, okay? So from here, you learn that actually this M, this big M here, should be again at the level of 10 to the 10, 10 to the 12 GeV. Okay? So either you are led to think about tiny Yukawas. Then, of course, our task, you know, if you do research in neutrinos, would be to understand why these guys are so tiny. Okay? Or otherwise, you are led to think about these right-handed neutrinos as very, very, very heavy. Okay? Now, actually, since these have to be really heavy to get the right mass for our light neutrinos, this way of giving mass to neutrinos is called the seesaw mechanism. Okay, so this is what you usually hear as seesaw mechanism for neutrinos. Simply because you have this very two different mass scales, one for the right-handed neutrinos, one for our light neutrinos. So it's like a seesaw, as you usually see it represented. Okay?
That's large enough that you don't
probably have the other elements, yeah? Not directly. You don't produce it directly at any collider that you can imagine. Yeah. Well, there are people, I mean, there is a lot of research going on for this, and you can see indirect you know, effect of the presence of these guys, but yeah. Also, there are a lot of, yeah. Okay. So now we have learned how to give mass to the neutrinos. Let me introduce a little bit more of, you know, of tools for neutrinos. So basically for quarks, we have seen what the CKM matrix is for quarks. We can do something very similar for neutrinos, actually. So this is what is called the P, M, and S matrix. So this is from the initials of the people that proposed this new matrix. So let me write them down. So this is Pontecorvo, Maki, Nagawa, and Sakata. And so I'm keeping the parallel because actually you should really be able to apply everything that you have learned for the CKM matrix to write down your PM and S matrix. But let me give you just a couple of details. Then, as I said, the trans exactly in the same way as for quarks. So this will be a unitary matrix, right? And you can find it out if you try to diagonalize our masses. So for neutrinos, we have seen that this is the mass matrix. So what you have to do is to find that rotation U in such a way that v square over 4 and ij such a way that this guy here is diagonal. Right? So you rotate both on the left and on the right to diagonalize the masses of the neutrinos. Okay. So this is for neutrinos. But then what Gordon showed you already is that the charged leptons also have mass thanks to the Higgs mechanism. So you have, in the Lagrangian, you have terms like this, your Higgs, left-handed leptons, so this would be, you know, the mass term for charged leptons. This was the singlet, right, for leptons. And this is our SU2 doublet. So this, I think, you should have already seen it, right? So again, you can do the same type of contractions of SU2 indexes. You write down now the term for the charged leptons, OK? And from here, you see that you have something like minus vacuum expectation value over square root of 2. Right? It's exactly the same thing as we have done for neutrinos, and as also Gordon already showed you. Again, this is another 3×3 matrix that you can diagonalize. This is, of course, generically different from this matrix for neutrinos, right? So you will have another rotation matrix, let me call it V, such that V So you will have two matrices now, be left and be right, such that this is again diagonal, right? So it's really exactly as you have done for quarks. And then you put together this rotation for charged leptons, these rotations for neutrinos, and this is how you get your PMNS matrix. Okay? So at the end of the day, you will get actually couplings of your neutrinos and charged leptons with a W that are of this form. So this is actually physically the place where your PMNS matrix is entering. And as I said, you can do the exercise and see that this is a combination of this rotation here for charged leptons and this rotation here for neutrinos. Okay? So I like to write down these terms because this is an additional Feynman rule that you should use if you want to, compute diagrams that are connecting a W boson, neutrino, and the charged lepton. Okay? Let's see where I can move right. Okay. This.
Themselves like matrices for flavors. Yeah?
Correct. There are 3 times 3 matrices. Yeah. Right.
So the fact that these are different to like your mass matrix is different to the flavor matrix is what gives flavor oscillations. So.
Correct. Yeah. This we see in a few minutes, hopefully. Yeah.
This will be at the flavor changing vertices for neutrinos.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so just to be super explicit, basically, our PMNS matrix is connecting flavor eigenstates. So these are our flavor eigenstates for neutrinos to mass eigenstates. So we'll have something like this. How did I call it? So these are mass eigenstates, these are flavor eigenstates, and this is the PMNS matrix. Okay? Yeah, here it's the same thing, just I didn't write it everywhere, but yeah. This is the PMNS matrix, connecting flavor eigenstates to mass eigenstates. Okay, so now let's see how as you mentioned, oscillation on neutrino works. So let's do the following exercise. Let's take at some point in space, x equal to 0, a neutrino, that a wave packet of neutrinos with that is flavor eigenstate, and that has some flavor alpha. Okay, so this is our initial condition. Okay, and let's follow this wave packet of neutrinos, and let's see how it evolves. Okay, so this is what we want to do. What we know is that at some generic x, this guy will be given by a superposition. So I'm summing over I. Then I have this exponent minus I p I x minus I energy time. Okay, so this, so I'm summing over I, these are mass eigenstates. Okay? This is what I was calling neutrino alpha. This is the PMNS matrix that we have just seen, right? And this is our time evolution. Okay? Where this is the momentum, pi. Don't forget that we have also an index I here. And this is e squared, so the energy, minus the mass of the I neutrino. OK? Yeah, you can check that actually if you put this to 0, you get exactly this state, this initial state here. OK? Now I'm asking, what is the probability at x to see a neutrino that is that has a flavor beta? Okay. So the amplitude, we call it alpha beta. A beta alpha of x is equal to neutrino beta. Okay. We can, you know, plug in this sum here. We can use the fact that we have orthogonality relations that are actually telling us that neutrino j, neutrino I is equal to delta ij. So of course, if I take mass eigenstates, if I contract two mass eigenstates that are different, I get 0, otherwise 1. This is the orthogonality relation. So now I have all the ingredients to compute this guy. Okay? Right? And what I get is the sum over I of V P M N S I So now I'm getting two elements of this PMNS matrix. And basically, I'm projecting on the physical mass eigenstate I. OK? So I can compute the probability that at x, I am getting a flavor eigenstate beta. Should be the square of this guy. Right? But then typically what we know is that in the experiment or in the measurement that we that we do, this energy here of the neutrino wave packet is much, much larger than this tiny mass. So basically, what I can write down is this pi as the energy minus a small perturbation, and I square over 2e. I can use this to write down my probability of transition. So the probability to go from alpha to beta will be equal to I have defined this angle, pi I, as minus mi square x over 4e. Oh, sorry, you have in front of this guy. Okay, let me erase in the meantime something. So for what I said before, this angle phi is quite small, right, typically. So we can further expand this exponent of 2. Actually, finally, we can write down a final expression for this probability as, again, the probability from alpha to beta equal to, now I'm computing this square here, okay? So what I get is a double sum now over I and j, what I call matrix J. I will tell you what it is. Then we have 1 minus 2 times square of pi J where actually I've defined this matrix here. Equal to some combination of elements of the PMNS matrix, that is alpha I PMNS star . So this is simply combination of elements of the PMNS matrix, okay? And instead, the single phi ij is defined as phi I minus phi j equal to mi square minus mj square x over 4e. So this is really just algebra. It's nothing more than that. But what is important physically is to understand the following thing. So what we have asked is we start at x equal to 0 with the Flavour eigenstate alpha. And then we look a little bit later at some x different from 0 if we have a Flavour eigenstate beta. The probability will be non-zero as long as you have neutrinos that have mass, right? So if actually the neutrinos were massless, then this angle would be 0, and then this probability will be 0. So this is actually the way in which people were able to say that neutrinos have mass, observing this oscillation of neutrinos from a Flavour eigenstate alpha to a Flavour eigenstate beta that are different. Okay? So neutrino oscillation implies mass of neutrinos different from zero. Sorry, say it again.
I remember hearing the talk somebody think two have the same mass. Is that correct?
Maybe in the past. Okay. Now not anymore. No. So this is actually a field that is pretty new. Yeah. I think the first oscillation was in that was observed was in 98 or 2000, something like this. So this is a field that I like to present to you because it's part of the standard model. Neutrinos are part of the standard model, but it's very exciting because people do really research on that. So it's evolving pretty fast. Yeah.
Can you explain again why if phi ij is zero, then probability is zero?
So if the masses are either zero or zero or equal, this angle is zero. You put it here, and basically you are left with this term. Again, basically, if you want to have an alpha different from beta, you see you can plug in your PMNS matrix elements, and then you see that this is actually zero. So if alpha is different from beta, you will have a zero probability, and so therefore no oscillation. So actually, maybe it's nice to write down.
Is this the, like, it's zero for the same reason for the mechanism? Because the PMNS is in unit. So you add all these things. You can write it as that sum square, and then it goes to zero.
It's kind of similar, right? Yeah. Yeah, you can see it in a similar way. That's true. Yeah. It's a bit different in the sense it can be a little bit misleading because when you think about neutrino masses, you know, you have extra terms that are this Dirac mass M, as I called, that is different than what you get in the quark field. So the way in which you give mass to neutrinos is different than the way in which you give mass to quarks. But then there are very many properties that are very similar. Yeah. So maybe, so let me write maybe explicitly so that you see even better this probability there. So let's write down this. So the probability from going to alpha to beta um, So this I give you the result. You can get it really just using the fact that our PMNS matrix is unitary. So it's a nice exercise to get to this point, which this probability is a delta function minus the sum over I smaller than j of 4 times real part of j I j beta alpha sine square of ij minus so from for going from here to here. Literally, I've just used unitarity relations, okay? And from this expression, should be more clear to you that indeed, if this angle here is zero, then we don't get oscillation, okay? Say it again, sorry.
Have all the components of the PMNS matrix been measured? Have we seen that many?
So they start to be measurements that are using the fact that indeed the neutrinos are oscillating. But the measurement that we have at the moment are much, much weaker than the measurement that we have for the CKM matrix. So the errors are much, much larger. And this is actually, so there is there are a lot of neutrino facilities, neutrino experiments in the US, for example, that are trying to measure much better the elements of the PMNS matrix. Yeah. Actually not. Yeah. Okay. So then just a couple of properties for this oscillation of neutrinos that you can look, because it's nice to do the algebra and understand a little bit of physics that is involved in this. So basically, one can ask, what is the probability for an anti-neutrino alpha to go to an anti-neutrino beta? OK, this is another question that we can ask. And we can do again the entire exercise. And what we learn is that everything holds, actually. But the only thing that you have to change is that your VPMNS will be replaced with the VPMNS conjugate. So you can go through, because it literally works exactly as I've shown you for neutrinos. And then, since we are speaking about conjugates, what we will learn is that this probability is exactly like as here, as written here. But here, you change your sign. So this is the only difference, because here you see that you are taking the imaginary part of this combination of elements of the PMNS matrix. And once that you take the conjugate, you flip the sign. So this is a nice property that tells you that if you have CP invariants, so if these two guys were the same, then CP invariants would tell you that the probability of an antineutrino alpha to go to an antineutrino beta is equal to the probability of the corresponding neutrino to go from alpha to beta. Okay? So this is one property that you can check, that indeed it works in this way. Another property is the following. So two is that actually the probability for an antineutrino from going from alpha to beta is equal to the probability an antineutrino . So if you take a neutrino, go from alpha to beta, this probability is the same as an antineutrino going from beta to alpha. And this is a property of CPT invariance, actually. Okay. So these are all games that one can play using the properties of the PMNS matrix. And actually are telling us really the physics, because it are telling us, for example, that we have CPT invariance in the neutrino sector. Okay? Yes. And here you check in the neutrino sector. Yeah. Okay, I think I have to stop here.